This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Little Rock is Arkansas Senior Senator Mark Pryor. Senator Pryor, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Well, let's start this conversation talking about some legislation that we've talked about before. That is legislation that you helped author, Combating Border Patrol Corruption. We've talked about this through the process. It's now been signed into law.
Yeah, I think that's good news. We basically have a situation where over the last few years, the Congress has really beefed up our presence along the Mexican border. That's mostly for illegal immigration, but there are other reasons. But what's happened is the Mexican drug cartels have actively and unfortunately effectively been trying to corrupt our Border Patrol personnel down there, and they've had some success with it. So basically what this does is requires the Customs and Border Patrol to do the appropriate polygraphs and the background checks on their employees. They're supposed to be doing it anyway, but I think they've been overwhelmed by the number of new hires. And this is not an issue that's just isolated down on the border. This is important for all the rest of us because the Mexican drug cartels now have a presence in 230 cities in the U.S., including two in your listening area, Fort Smith, Fayetteville, and Little Rock. So this is a big concern, not just for down on the border, but really for the whole country. And there's a ton of drugs that come through that border. And when you have a corrupt Border Patrol group on the U.S. side, you know, there's really no way to stop it.
Another bit of legislation you've been involved in that has some effects in Northwest and Western Arkansas is the America Competes Reauthorization Act.
Yeah, you know, actually, that's a bill that I've been working on for a while. We were able to get it. I had four pieces in that bill. I had four amendments to that bill. But the part that really relates to Fayetteville is something that Fayetteville has really done a great job of, and that is you have that technology park that's affiliated with the U of A, but it's down on, I guess you'd say, off South School down
right.
there, kind of near, roughly near the old Fayetteville Airport. But anyway, that is what, you know, in kind of U.S. government parlance, they call a science park. And basically what you do is you get a university and the private sector and they joint venture, and they create a ton of jobs. I think in that area alone, I think they've had 300-plus jobs created that pay an average of $63,000 a year. These are the jobs of the future. This is what we want. So in the America Competes Act, I was able to add an amendment on science parks to really allow and pave the way for more of these around the country. And what we want to do is build those relationships between universities, you know, the kind of the best and the brightest, most creative in the universities, and the relationship with the business community. They have that business know-how and know how to get products to market. And I think that this could really be great for the country. And, you know, it's like you have that science park there. That's almost like having a Fortune 500 company headquartered in your backyard, but instead of one company, it's, you know, 20 or 30 different smaller companies. It's really a good thing.
Let me ask you about a procedural matter. There is discussion that the Senate filibuster rule may be different by the time this session ends. Do you think that will happen?
Well, there are discussions about that. Let me say this. The filibuster can be the most frustrating thing for any American or anybody that pays any attention to American politics because literally one senator can slow everything down. But it's very important in our government that we have some place in the government where we are certain that the minority's views get heard. And that's really where what the United States Senate is all about. The minority has the ability to slow things down and shape legislation. So, and that's the way the Founding Fathers set it up. Now, of course, it was senators after the Constitution was written that actually wrote the Senate rules, but nonetheless, the nature of the Senate, it's kind of in the DNA of the Senate that we protect the rights of the minority. And I think we need to continue to do that. So I don't support anything that would just allow us to run over the minority and a pure majority rule that, you know, the whims of the, you know, politics of the day would trump everything else. I think the fact that the Senate does have some of these arcane rules actually serve a very useful purpose in that they slow us down and require us to work together to solve the nation's problems. So, back to your question, yes, there are many who want to see the filibuster rules changed. I think there is some room to modernize those, to take away some of the just pure games that happen when it comes to the filibuster rules. But My guess is that most of those will stay intact. Probably what will happen is, more than anything, the two leaders will reach an agreement on how the filibuster will and will not be used over the next couple of years, and that'll probably solve, 75% of the problems right there.
What chance is there that the health care reform legislation that was signed into law last year will remain intact? Many on the opposite side of the Capitol, now in Republican hands, are calling for some or all rejection of that health care reform.
Yeah, the Republicans, especially the House Republicans, want to see a total repeal. I don't support that, because if you go to a total repeal, what you do is you go back to the old law. And you got to remember that it was just a year ago that every single year, pretty much every American was looking at anywhere between an 8 and a 15% increase in their health care costs every year. So that would mean that for most Americans, in 7 years, their health care costs would double. Now, this bill fixes some of that, and it doesn't fix it all, and it's not perfect. I've always said that this bill will need some work, this new law will need some work over time. We're going to find things that don't work. We're going to find things that work better than we thought. We're going to see some changes in the industry and various business practices that, will make something, less workable under this legislation as opposed to it was, 2 or 3 years ago. So I think we certainly should tweak this legislation, and if any House or Senate Republican wants to come up with a proposed alternative, something to replace this new law with, I certainly will sit down and look at that and work through that with them and see if I can support it. But just an out-and-out repeal puts us back into a situation where people's health care costs double every 7 years, and that's not a very workable answer.
Arkansas has a new senator, John Bozeman, Republican. Have you had a chance to talk to him since he's been sworn in?
I have. I actually saw him on his swearing-in day and actually was able to kind of have the honor of escorting him down the hall, down the walkway there as he was getting sworn in. And I look forward to working with John. We had a great relationship when he was in the House. I don't see that changing. If anything, we'll just be working closer together than we had in the past, and I think he was a very good congressman for the 3rd District, and I look forward to working with. I look forward to working with our whole new Arkansas delegation. We have 3 new congressmen, including Steve Womack up in Northwest Arkansas, and I think he's going to be very solid. So I look forward to working with everybody, and what I've been preaching in our delegation is, look, in our delegation, we don't have Democrats or Republicans. We have Arkansans. And we all work together, and I've seen it very closely for the last 8 years where, say, Congressman Bozeman might help Congressman Ross, and even though they don't really overlap at all, they understand if it's good for Mike Ross, it's good for our, or good for the 4th District, it's good for Arkansas, and that principle goes all the way around. So I hope we continue to work together like we have over the last 8 years, and with Senator Bozeman, I'm confident that I'll have a great working relationship.
Senator Mark Pryor, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Between 5 and 10,000 Marshallese, the largest migrant population in the world, have relocated from their impoverished Pacific Island nation to Springdale to work in the poultry industry, enroll their children in public school, and access medical care. Many move here with only their personal belongings, no insurance, and a dream of a better life. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports that potential federal aid requested last year by a group of U.S. legislators to offset the burden of care on state agencies is finally being investigated.
Under a compact of free association, our government allows Marshallese citizens to live and work in the U.S. for as long as they wish. In exchange, we maintain strategic U.S. military operations on the Marshall Islands. Certain territories and states that host Marshallese, as well as migrants from Palau and the Federated States of Micronesia, are annually reimbursed by the U.S. federal government for health, education, and welfare costs provided to islanders via compact impact grants. Arkansas has never been a recipient. But in late December, the Congressional Government Accountability Office said it plans to launch an audit of Compact Impact funding at the request of 8 U.S. congressmen, including then-U.S. Representative John Bozeman, then-Senator Vic Snyder, and Congressman Mike Ross, who claimed inadequacies. That request stemmed from a meeting held the year before at John Bozeman's Washington, D.C. office with Marshallese officials from Bikini Atoll. David Gutnick, Director of International Affairs and Trade at the GAO, works on issues related to the Compacts of Free Association.
Right. Well, the Compacts of Free Association with Marshall Islands and Micronesia were initially established in 1986 and amended in 2003. So the 2003 agreement is a 20-year agreement, and under that agreement, there were four areas identified as affected jurisdictions, those areas affected by the migration of Marshallese and Micronesians to the U.S. Mainland and to the territories. The four affected jurisdictions are Guam, the Marianas Islands, American Samoa, and Hawaii.
Problem is, in 2003, thousands of poverty-level Pacific Islanders had already settled in Northwest Arkansas, yet no compact funding was allocated to this state. The reason? No congressional request for it was ever made. In the meantime, the state of Hawaii is granted millions of dollars in compact impact annually to offset medical, education, and welfare costs, while Arkansas gets nothing.
Right. Well, the 20-year Compact of Free Association established $600 million or $30 million per year over 20 years that would be divided among the four affected jurisdictions, again, Hawaii, Guam, Mariana Islands, and American Samoa. Those were the only entities that were identified as affected jurisdictions. The Department of Interior is asked on a five-yearly basis to enumerate or count the number of migrants. That was last done and issued in 2008. And established roughly 18,000 compact migrants in Guam, followed by 12,000 or so in Hawaii, a lesser number, about 2,000 in the Mariana Islands, and a very small number in American Samoa. It's been estimated that there are somewhere between 6,000 and 10,000 Marshallese residing in Arkansas. Those estimates are based largely, as I understand it, on state enumerations or estimations.
Arkansas has not been included in the DOI's five-year enumeration, but now an audit by the GAO of Compact Impact will likely consider this state as an affected jurisdiction.
We've been asked by the members of Congress to look at the measures of enumeration, the measures of impact, as well as the federal government programs that administer the Compact grant and also provide other federal services, primarily health and education services, to migrant populations.
U.S. lawmakers also requested that the Government Accountability Office review medical screening protocols for in-migrating islanders. Sandy Hainline-Williams, an RN with the Washington County Health Department, is a nurse coordinator for the Marshallese Hispanic Outreach Team.
Their chronic illnesses are primarily diabetes, which is absolutely rampant in their population, starting at a very early age. They also have issues with high blood pressure, several different types of cancer. I don't deal a lot with the chronic illnesses. I deal mostly with communicable diseases.
In the islander population, that would be TB and Hansen's disease.
And it may be a year, it may be 2 years before they start breaking down with symptoms of tuberculosis. It's very difficult to say what their actual rate of infection is here in Arkansas. I imagine that their TB rates mimic that of the islands,
which is endemic in the RMI, but Hainline-Williams has seen few cases of Hansen's disease among islanders here.
That's a disease that you usually acquire as a child. It takes anywhere from 8 to 20 years before they begin to show any symptoms. I think a lot of their problem with Hansen's disease comes from the fact that they have a pristine immune system. So they're not as able to fight off diseases as the rest of the world population. 98% of the world population is immune to Hansen's disease.
Hanline Williams and other medical providers say low-income Islanders often resort to area hospital emergency rooms, even for routine care, or visit St. Francis House community clinics, whose staff treat them for free. U.S.-born children of Marshallese are covered under the Medicaid program, Our Kids.
And that Medicaid program will reimburse the hospital. If they have insurance, and a lot of them do have insurance, but cannot make the copay, then the insurance will reimburse some of that. They have to make up their copay. And as for the rest of it, I know that the hospitals bill, and I think it goes unreimbursed.
Even if they pay into the Medicaid system, native-born Islanders cannot by law receive any U.S. benefits, including Social Security. Sandy Hanline Williams says because of that, Compact Impact will be extraordinarily beneficial for the Islander community and agencies that serve them here.
Oh, I would love to see that happen. I just think that if we have between 6,000 and 10,000 people living here, and their world population is about 120,000, that we have a high enough percentage here that we should be tapping into some of that Compact money to help with the medical reimbursements.
The GAO audit of Compact Impact will also look at screening of Islander migrants into the U.S. as so-called freely associated state citizens under the Compact of Free Association. Marshallese moving to Arkansas may do so with just a passport, unlike those visiting or applying for permanent resident alien status in the United States. Marshallese are not required to go through extensive background checks and provide evidence they will be able to support themselves while living here. So will the GAO Compact Impact audit be complete anytime soon? David Gutnick, GAO Director of International Affairs and Trade.
Well, no. What happens is we're in our design phase of this engagement. Once we complete that, we report out to the Hill on what our intended objectives, scopes, and methodology is. And at that point in time, we agree with congressional staff on an issuance date for our report.
One other big hitch has been getting an accurate count of Marshallese living in Northwest Arkansas who elude government enumerators. Islanders tend to come and go and live in fluid extended families. The most recent 2009 census lists only 1,000 Pacific Islanders living in Springdale. Perhaps the new 2010 census local level demographic data available next month will tell a more realistic story. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
In just a couple of minutes on Ozarks at Large, you may have noticed that Jody Beznoska was not here for her regular Thursday visit yesterday. A reason? She was in New York City, finding out what artist might be on the Walton Arts Center stage next year or in the years to come. A report from New York City and the conference they call APAP. That's coming up on Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me, not in the new studio, but by phone from New York City, is Jody Beznoska, who is the Vice President of Communications for Walton Arts Center. Jody, welcome.
Hi, Kyle.
Hello. What are you doing in New York?
Well, I am here with a bunch of Walton Arts Center colleagues, and we are attending the Association for Performing Arts Presenters Conference, also known as APAP.
And if I remember correctly, APAP is sort of a market for artists, for agents, for venues to all kind of meet together.
Yeah, this is the biggest event that APAP puts on. APAP is actually a service organization that serves presenters like Walton Arts Center and booking agents and artists, and it's kind of the organization that tries to bring all those people together to support the presentation of arts throughout the country. And this is their signature event. This is their big conference. There's more than 4,000 people attending the conference. And it's just like you said, it's very much a marketplace for presenters and agents and artists to try to connect and get each other's programs together. It's really something.
So does that mean future seasons, not just at Walton Arts Center, but other arts venues, are somewhat determined or at least influenced by what happens in New York this week?
Very much. Not just us. There's presenters from all over the country. Our contemporary, you know, our folks down in Texas who we work with and are friends with, but they're from everywhere. I sat next to somebody at breakfast today who was from Hawaii, and it really is where a lot of deals get made and a lot of shows get seen. We get a chance to see little snippets of performances that we wouldn't get to see otherwise, and we try to build our season from everybody that we meet here and all of the different shows that we see, and put together a wide range of performances. So we see everything from jazz to kids theater to dance to Broadway.
What's a typical day at APAP like then?
A typical day starts probably about 8 o'clock. You'll generally take a meeting with a booking agent, or if you're Aaron, you'll go to a special session on leadership or on, you know, the future of the arts. And you'll take your, you know, you'll do your 8 o'clock meeting, you'll grab some coffee somewhere, and then you'll head off at 9 o'clock to a plenary session or to a special interest session about, I don't know, jazz or cultural diplomacy or how to get more people to come see shows in a recession. And then you will probably have lunch with another meeting. And then you might go to maybe four or five different showcases in the afternoon. And these are 20-minute snippets of companies or performances. Sometimes they're performed in a little room in the hotel that's probably no bigger than our hotel room, and sometimes they're performed at a club like B.B. King's Club down on 42nd Street. So you'll run around and you'll see all of those different different showcases. You might go to another session, you might have another meeting, and then you might go to more showcases in the evening. And the days usually end at midnight or 1 o'clock because the showcases run all the way through till the wee hours of the morning.
Oh, my gosh. Now, you mentioned Aaron, who is a colleague of yours at Walton Arts Center, Aaron Jepson, correct?
Correct. Aaron is our booking and events manager.
And Aaron is there with you?
She is.
Aaron, this is your first APAP conference, is that right?
Yes, it is. I've been to some smaller regional ones before, but this is my first.
So what's a first-timer at APAP? What's that experience like?
You know, it's different than I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to be exhausted the whole time and overwhelmed, but instead I've been completely inspired and excited about the stuff I'm hearing. Maybe it's because I'm new at it that I'm just taking it all in and absorbing it all, but I'm just ready to kind of make a huge difference. You know, it sounds big, but have to do it where I can, even in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And that's, I'm leaving the conference with that inspiration. I don't book shows in my job at Walton Arts Center, so I've been taking more of the leadership and how do you lead your teams in a creative environment and get everything to just make sense. I'm taking that away. So it's been a lot of fun and exciting.
Well, I'll open this question to both of you. What have your colleagues from around the country said about getting people into arts venues in a slow economy? Have they had positive experiences?
The groups I'm in have been going to, the sessions I've been going to have really been focusing on the idea of turning the arts away from a theater, putting it out either in different spaces. We've been talking about this idea of a third space a lot, and meeting spaces and parks, and anything can be a place for the arts, and also how to make it accessible. It's not going to be your Broadway ticket price. They've been talking a lot about things that Walton Arts Center has already been doing, actually, like free programming during festivals, lower price tickets like we do with our 10 by 10 program. So it's been interesting that Walton Arts Center actually seems very progressive in that we've already been doing this for a few years. And some of these venues are talking about that's what they're going to have to do to keep their audiences, and here we are doing it. So it's really cool to see that.
Yeah, I agree with Aaron 100%. And one of the themes that you hear at every conference, whether it's a marketing conference or a booking conference or a Broadway conference, is that the traditional arts audience is not the future, that there is a whole group of people out there in the community that didn't grow up with the arts in their schools every day, and they didn't grow up playing in symphonies and bands and singing in choirs and, you know, having art classes. That, so we're facing a very different environment in the future, and pretty much everybody is saying adjust your practices to try to get this new audience, otherwise you won't survive. And so I'm proud to listen to the conference and listen to the trends, because these are the areas that we've been trying to focus on at Walton Arts Center, and it's hard because a building like Walton Arts Center is built for people to come and sit and watch. It's trying to get people to participate and feel very deeply connected to the art form is a challenge. And so it's helping us frame that for the future, and it's also helping us, it's influencing as we think about expansion at Walton Arts Center. All of these conversations are really important to help us determine what our new theaters are going to look like.
Finally, have either of you seen any arts troupes or artists that maybe we won't see in Walton Arts Center next year, maybe we will, but any that you think, oh, now this is someone I didn't know about before, but I really think they're going to be something?
Well, one of my favorite experiences here is coming back to the Hilton. They have all of these different arts groups literally playing in these tiny little rooms, probably no bigger than a hotel room. And I saw a female folk bluegrass trio called Red Molly. And I thought they were terrific. And we might actually be able to book them. But that's one of the best parts of this conference, is stumbling across those random little bands that you go, gosh, nobody in Arkansas will have heard of these people, but if we can get them here and if we can somehow convince people to come in the door, they're really going to enjoy them. And most of it is that. Most of it is stumbling on tiny little bands or little dance companies that you go, yeah, this might be tough, but we should try, because it means we might be able to show people something they didn't expect.
Well, have a good rest of your time there and safe travels back. Aaron Jepson, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. It's been great.
Jody, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kyle.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday, and got a new one from Studebaker John, another from a fella named Damon Fowler. Also have Moreland and Arbuckle, Deb Callahan, Memphis Gold, and a few others. That's this Friday at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. Picture in your mind a globe. Now, start in the Czech Republic. Music there, polka. Move over a little bit to Germany for cuisine. Then across the globe to India for an orphanage. And it all starts in Fort Smith. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madulkar has this report.
A form of dance music and dance itself, the polka is popular throughout Europe and the Americas. The word polka is said to be derived from a Czech word meaning little half, referring to the short half steps featured in the dance. A sample of the music can be heard tomorrow at a German dinner being organized by the First Lutheran Church of Fort Smith. Brenda Acord, publicity chairwoman of Lutheran's Women's Missionary League, has the details.
Well, this is our fifth annual German dinner that we have, and it is all German food. We serve rouladen, fried potatoes, red cabbage or green beans, cucumber salad, applesauce cake with caramel sauce, and drinks. And it'll be held from 5 to 7. We will have takeout meals also. So if you don't have time to stop in and have the meal with us, you can drive through the back alley and they'll have takeouts for you. We also serve a $3 hot dog children's dinner if they don't want German food. And this will be held at First Lutheran Church Family Ministries Building at 1115 North D Street in Fort Smith.
All the food will be hand-prepared by the ladies of the congregation, who follow recipes handed down over the years. Proceeds from the dinner will benefit Bethania Orphans in India.
This is done by the Lutheran Women's Missionary League of First Lutheran Church, and we do this to benefit Bethania Orphanage, which is a orphanage in Tamil Nadu in southeastern India, and it provides homes for orphans. They care for children with cerebral palsy and other disabilities, and they have a rehabilitation center for the disabled, and they provide immunizations, basic care, education through daycare, after-school care for the impoverished children in that area.
Even though the dinner helps a serious cause, according to Brenda, it will be a fun event for individuals and families alike.
We do have two people that greet, and they are dressed up in an authentic German costume. So it's, you know, the lederhosen for the men and a German dress for the woman. We also have some dresses on display that are authentic German, you know, costumes. And then we have polka music also. We're trying to have a live band, but I haven't firmed up if that's going to happen or if it's just going to be recordings. But we have had live music in the past. But there will be German music also, which makes it a real nice atmosphere. It's a kind of formal affair. We have cloth, tablecloths, and you go through a buffet line, but you're served your drinks and all. So it's very nice, and it's a very festive occasion.
The ticket price is $15 for an adult and $10 for ages 12 and younger. They can be purchased by calling 785-2886 or 452-5330. For Ozarks at Large, this is Ithi Agnihotri Mutholkar.
It's Friday, January 14th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And while I hate Kyle...
She only says that because I am going to be taking a long weekend in her favorite city, New Orleans.
But I love, and this is no secret to you either, I love trout fishing in America, both the music and the band. And I just want to tell you, my opinion has been validated.
Because?
Not only because they have 4 Grammy nominations, come on, but because I found out in doing a story about their performance coming up at the Alma Performing Arts Center that they're being collected by Spatial Collections at the university libraries in Fayetteville.
So what does that mean? All their lyrics,
all their, really it's ephemera. Mm. All of this stuff that Keith Grimwood has been keeping. Posters and stories and ticket stubs and parking passes and everything else that has been filling up his house is going to go to Spatial Collections. Timothy Nutt, who is assistant director of Spatial Collections, says they've had a big impact on not only the music scene in Arkansas, but the national music scene. We're always looking for individuals, groups, or organizations that have made some sort of impact on Arkansas history. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's quite a compliment.
And Keith is very excited that he gets to drag out all these things that he's collected for 34 and a half years.
And they won't be in his house anymore?
No, but he's dragging stuff home from the trout house
to
fill the spaces. So it's all going to work out. It sounds like lyrics for a new song. The songs they'll be singing Thursday are from the new CD, which is called Looking at Lucky, and they're largely about being the age most of us are.
And when you say Thursday, this is at the Alma Performing Arts Center.
Yes,
we should establish that, yes.
Yes, I think I said that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You weren't listening, were you?
Sorry.
And that age is old enough to have senior moments and lose the car in the parking lot and young enough to jump on the back of the grocery cart and ride to the car.
Very good.
It's a good thing. Again, it's 7:30 Thursday at the Alma Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $10 to $20.
Which is pretty inexpensive.
For 4-time Grammy nominees, really? 632-2129. Okay. Now, I know trout is not everybody's cup of tea. Just like New Orleans is not everybody's cup of tea. And while I think there's something inherently wrong with you people, I got a couple of other options for Thursday.
All right.
Thursday's the big night. Pedal Steel guitarist Robert Randolph and
always,
the family band.
Always puts on a great show.
9 o'clock at George's Majestic Lounge. He's been called one of the 100 greatest guitarists of all time by Rolling Stone magazine.
So there you go.
Kind of impressive. And he's touring in support of his 3rd studio album called We Walk This Road, which was produced by T-Bone Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
And has a lot of old-time gospel feel to it.
Very much. Very much a gospel influence. And my advice... If you're thinking about going, call right now, because Robert Randolph at George's generally sells out. So
yeah,
call
tickets
ahead.
Tickets are just $20. Yeah. So call now or go on georgesmajesticlounge.com. And if you're still not satisfied, mm-hmm. we aim to please. How about country musician Tracy Lawrence performing at the Cherokee Casino in West Siloam Springs Thursday?
Ooh, Thursday is the big night.
10 o'clock, free.
Really?
Yeah.
Just show up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, let me give you a word about that if you've never been there. Their performance space is this really cool bar area with a really cool stage, and it's really small.
Okay.
So go early. Go get some dinner. Go over there.
That's in West Siloam Springs, Oklahoma.
Yes, it is. Now, if none of that does it for you, the Wakarusa Music Festival lineup has been announced.
Wakarusa is a festival that for several years was outside of Lawrence, Kansas, mm-hmm. moved 2 years ago, mm-hmm. or now 2.5 years ago, to Northwest Arkansas, Mulberry Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
His first year here had some pretty good success and some pretty interesting artists. Last year, success, doubled in attendance, and bigger names. This year, it's quite an impressive lineup.
It's set for June 2nd through 5th, and they've really, as its organizer says, put some money into the artist budget. Now, who you think's a big deal, I think, depends on you, because they do a lot of electronica. They do a lot of folk.
Right. But it's a genre-spanning lineup. I mean, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings are there, and they're pretty much kind of old-school R&B. Mm-hmm. My Morning Jacket, which is, I don't know, they're pretty straight-ahead rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Ben Harper, who's a good rock and roll sort of R&B performer.
North Mississippi All-Stars.
Very familiar.
Dark Star Orchestra.
Mumford & Sons, which topped some people's list of best CDs of the year last year. They're mm-hmm. kind of a folk band out of Britain.
Humphreys McGee, Ghostland Observatory, something for everybody. And we've got a story in today's What's Up, or you can find more at wakarusa.com.
Now, that takes place June 2nd through the 5th.
Correct.
And if this year is anything like the last 2 years, there might be a few more names that get added as the festival season gets closer.
Oh, absolutely.
I've heard some rumors.
And I think it's one of those things, they say tickets are selling very quickly already.
Yeah, people come from all over Mid-America, and I think with a lineup like this, even a little bit beyond what we consider Mid-America, it's going to be a big show.
If you want to go, you should check out wakarusa.com now and not be disappointed. Now, we've teased you about a lot of things coming up.
Mm-hmm.
There are things going on this weekend, never fear. Saturday, a very cool event with a sort of a musical twist. Shiloh Museum is doing its Christmas open house. But it's not a Christmas open house anymore.
I was going to say they're either very late or they're incredibly early.
A couple of years ago, they decided to move it to January and call it a cabin fever reliever.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, they're doing collectors. And still on the hill is their celebrity collectors. They collect balls.
I knew that Donna did spheres, balls of all kinds.
Yes. Fun, free, 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock on Saturday.
Maybe Special Collections someday will take her collection.
And her, maybe so.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's also going to be Depression glass and cars and all sorts of other interesting things. So it's free, Shiloh Museum in Springdale, 10 to 2 on Saturday. It's another bird weekend at Hobbs State Park Conservation Area. At 2 o'clock, Joneel is going to talk about winter birds of Beaver Lake mm-hmm. on Saturday. And at 3 o'clock, you can go on the Eagle Watch Tour, which I'm still trying to get on. I will this winter. So call about that, 789-5000. Saturday evening, the Ozark Plantation Band.
I am very upset that I will be out of town because I really wish I could be at this. Because OPB, if you lived in Fayetteville or Northwest Arkansas 20 years ago
mm-hmm.
or more.
Old school Fayetteville.
They were a big act, and you would, you know, go see them. They were local, but they don't play together that often anymore.
About the time of the Zorro and the Blue Footballs.
Yes, and a little bit beyond that, yeah.
Well, they will be playing at 7 o'clock at the Dixon Theater in Fayetteville. It's a fundraiser for a couple of really good causes, Arkansas Support Network and Sources for Community Independent Living Services, both of which serve folks with disabilities mm-hmm. to keep them in their homes and out in the community. And it's only $25 to get in.
And it should be a really good time.
I would call now, 756-5026 or 800-748-9768. There's also a CD release party Saturday night at George's for a compilation.
Yes.
It was created by Jeff Kearney, who's mm-hmm. a local musician, and includes new releases by the Matt Smith Group, the Arrowhead Project, Gouda, and several others. Also performing Saturday night will be Randall Shreve and The Sideshow, the Matt Smith Group, 1 Ounce Jig, Hardaway,
and The Commoners,
and Perpetual Werewolf.
Good show.
9 o'clock, $8.
And celebrates Music of Fayetteville.
There you go.
All right, Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. Just enough time to tell you this is Ozarks at Large on KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lowell. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Have a great Friday.